I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, we're celebrating The Future of Water, episode 51. If you missed the last milestone, episode number 50, it's never too late. You can always go back to whatever podcast platform you're using and download that episode in which I talked with Steph Aldock, Keith Hayes, and Eric Bendler about really the future of water, some long-term trends, and what's happening across the water sector globally. But today, I'm joined by Eric Bendler and Greg Goodwin, both of Bluefield Research, to discuss the Build America, Buy America Act and its implications for the water sector. We've had a lot of clients discussing this, or at least asking questions about what it means, and really information seems to be dripping out week to week, month to month, and I know Eric and Greg have some thoughts on what that means as far as agency waivers, whether it be the EPA for things like SRF or even FEMA, but also how it might ramp up over time. But with that being said, rather than hear me talk about what they're going to talk about, let's jump into the conversation with Eric and Greg. All right, so I'm joined here by Eric Bendler and Greg Goodwin from Bluefield Research. Eric, how are things?
Going pretty well. I'm having some work done to fix some drainage issues in my backyard, so you might hear a little bit of background noise, but you know, real homeowner work in my own water infrastructure.
Well, it's what remote working and remote workforce management does to you. You start building decks and cleaning up your yard. So congrats. Thanks for keeping the economy going.
That's right. That's what I'm here for.
Greg, how are you?
Doing pretty well. We've had some recent road work interrupting the silence here at the Bluefield home office, but it's quiet so far today. So hopefully that continues.
And then I guess it sounds like you're going to the U.S. Open tomorrow. So today's your start of actually what seems to be, because of Juneteenth, a very long weekend at Bluefield.
Yeah, it's a good way to kick it off, I guess. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, I'm actually more curious to hear about how traffic is getting out to Brookline and what that's going to entail.
So I'll have a report early next week for that for sure.
Excellent. Well, hey guys, I think I don't remember exactly. It could have been, it was definitely one of you, if not both of you. We talked about the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and what that means or is expected to mean for the water sector overall. This past year, legislated, signed into law, however you want to put it. But also alongside that was or is the Build America, Buy America Act, which really establishes domestic sourcing requirements across all federal financial assistance programs. And so what, you know, we've discussed this in various ways, whether it be through written content to our clients and definitely mentioned on podcasts, but I'm hoping we can zero into it now, probably because there has been a trickle or a bit more of a trickle of information coming out of Washington about what all this means and might mean going forward. So Greg, why don't we start with you? Let's just step back just so we can have some context. What is Build America, Buy America? What's it all about?
So as you mentioned earlier, Reese, it's a domestic sourcing provision that's embedded within the IIJA that's intended to incentivize the use of American-made building materials and products within infrastructure projects. And this is across, obviously, the whole IIJA sort of scope of work, and not just water, but obviously touches water projects as well. And the way that the law was scheduled was for at around this point in time, or 6 months after its signing, which was back in mid-November, the BABA part of the act was supposed to come into force. So a lot of those sort of issues around domestic sourcing and how agencies are going to deal with that, they're really starting to come to a head now. So that's kind of, I think, part of why we're talking about this.
So, I mean, really, and we can get into this, but it's not like domestic sourcing policies are new. They've been in place for certain things. So I guess why do we care? What's changing when it comes to domestic sourcing?
Sure. So yeah, as you mentioned, this is not a new sort of concept in the federal government of using U.S. made products for federally funded sort of projects and so forth. I mean, what's different here is sort of the scope, really. You know, in the past, there's typically been domestic sourcing requirements for things like steel and iron and concrete and so forth. You know, what's notable about IIJA and the BABA that's sort of embedded within it is that it goes far beyond sort of that ferrous material sort of requirement. So, you know, we're talking about steel, iron, and concrete as before, but also things like lumber, glass, polymer-based products, and also sort of finished goods as well. And I think that's an area that's probably going to be of increased scrutiny as we go forward for vendors of certain types of technologies. You know, there is sort of a component requirement price, you know, formula for being qualified as made in America, according to the newly created Made in America office, which is also established by the IIJA, which is run out of the White House. So basically, the way it's defined right now is that 55% of the cost of components within finished projects or products, rather, need to be made in the United States to be considered a made in the US product and be eligible for IIJA funds, essentially.
And this is, I mean, but I think partly because of the scope expansion, you know, as far as materials and products. I mean, and just to put it in context for us, you know, we just gave a webcast on digital water forecast. Eric, you actually led that and really drove the global forecast we put together. But one or several of the questions that came in through the chat during the webcast were about what's the role of Buy American. And I think it seems like, you know, we're not talking just steel pipes anymore. I mean, steel, you know, things like tariffs and domestic sourcing has been in place for a long time, like you said, but it could get into technology components and other areas that have so far been touched. I mean, do you have anything to add to that, Eric? Wouldn't you say that that's kind of what was the driver behind some of those chat room questions?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, from our perspective, a lot more of our clients are now going to be affected by these domestic sourcing requirements. And especially, you know, to Greg's point, whether it be treatment technology providers or digital technology providers, you know, I mean, we live in a world where, at least up until the past couple of years, supply chains were pretty globalized. I mean, they still certainly are, although now obviously we're having a lot of discussion around how smart that actually is and how resilient those supply chains are. But you know, the fact of the matter is that even many of our American clients, you know, manufacture many of the core components of their technologies or source a lot of the components that are going into their technologies, whether it be, you know, semiconductors or copper wiring or whatever the case may be, they're getting it from other places. And so this has really raised a lot of questions, a lot of kind of fears about how much they're going to be able to participate in projects that are funded by this kind of windfall infrastructure funding. The other piece of it, I mean, you mentioned, you know, what's changed. I think one other thing that's important to point out is just not only has the scope expanded in terms of the types of goods that are subject to these requirements, but we've also seen an expansion of the scope of the types of projects and funding programs that are subject to these requirements too, right? So BABA, Build America, Buy America, was passed as part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, but it doesn't only apply to IIJA funded projects. It also applies to, you know, basically any SRF funding, to the ARPA funding that was passed earlier, you know, at the beginning of the Biden administration. It applies even for projects that have already been kind of, you know, set in motion or programs that had initially put out their funding requirements prior to IIJA going into effect. It's applied retroactively. And that's a really important point. That's something we're going to come back to in how some of the agencies have been handling this. But basically, EPA puts out a funding program, utilities apply for funding. Now, according to the law, they're required to go back and retroactively kind of address those Made in America sourcing components, even if they didn't have those on the radar when they applied for funding, when they started to kind of plan out and design the projects. So that's really important. And again, that's something we can come back to in a couple of minutes.
Well, I think to that point, and so now we're in fire drill stage, right? I know there were sort of timeline milestones that agencies needed to meet, you know, once the passage of the law happened in, I guess, late 2021. And then there was sort of a 90-day and then 100-day hurdle in which agencies had to lay things out. So I think your point is a good one, Eric, about SRF, or, I mean, it could apply to Army Corps of Engineers, could, you know, FEMA, WIFIA, and so on. So it seems like, well, the reality of it is these agencies now have to apply for discrete waivers in which they target certain areas, which they feel that, you know, there'll be a price escalation, or they will be unable to source certain things because there's not enough supply manufactured or that can be sourced from the US itself. So what sort of waivers are being requested? That's a big topic of conversation these days.
Yeah. So basically the way that the Build America, Buy America Act is written, there are essentially three reasons that an agency can request a waiver for the, you know, the provisions of BABA. The first one is that applying the provisions would be inconsistent with public interest, which is, you know, obviously very vague in terms of what that means, but that's kind of the way that the law is written. The second one would be if there's not enough, you know, there's a lack of availability of domestic goods in either sufficient quantity or sufficient quality to meet the needs of the project. The third would be if using domestic products or materials would increase the overall project cost by 25% or more. So those are kind of the three conditions that have been laid out under the law. As you said, Reese, you know, the kind of preference of OMB, of the Office of Management and Budget, which is kind of administering this whole program, preference is that waivers are requested on a project-by-project basis, but the federal agencies that are responsible for kind of administering these funding programs are able to request broader kind of general applicability waivers in certain cases, right? And so that's what we're starting to see. I think, you know, as I think you mentioned, right, the effective date of BABA was May 14th of this year. So just, you know, about a month ago. Now we're starting to see all of the major federal agencies that administer major federal funding, infrastructure funding programs. They're starting to kind of put these general applicability waivers out there to try to figure out ways to navigate the situation, learn more about what the program is going to require, give their industry partners and stakeholders, give their funding recipients, you know, whether that be utilities or municipalities or whatever the case may be, give them time to kind of figure it out. And what we're seeing emerge are these really interesting different strategies by different departments or different agencies for how they're approaching that question of how do we actually, you know, can keep the wheels turning, keep the money flowing, keep the infrastructure investments coming while still honoring the kind of requirements of and the spirit of BABA.
So before I get into the elephant in the room, and that is about timing and, you know, of this act, Greg, one quick question for you is, you know, so we've historically been more recently at 55%. You know, domestic sourcing for those products. It's expected to ramp up over time. Do we have any visibility into what that looks like or could look like?
So in the IIJA language itself, there was provisions about, you know, a potential ramp up of defining American-made products by component price percentage, you know, stepping up from 55% to perhaps 60, 65, up to 75%. I believe that it requires an act of Congress for that to actually take place. It's not kind of baked into the language in terms of an automatic step up. So, you know, I've seen a couple of people talk about that online who are, you know, involved in infrastructure and sort of within sort of the policy wonk space. It seems pretty up in the air right now. I don't think there's a ton to be, you know, to look into kind of the crystal ball there about what's actually going to happen. But it is potentially that could occur, that the tightening of sort of definition around what is actually made in the US could actually get more stringent. I don't personally think it's terribly likely, but it's open for discussion, I suppose.
Well, so I agree with that. I mean, you did lose me. It's going to take an act of Congress.
True enough, right? That's kind of a death sentence right there. So
exactly. And I think the other part of this is, now I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit, but this is a true test of American political hypocrisy. You know, are we going to, you know, develop a supply chain, or maybe is it renationalize? I don't know if that's the right terminology, but or domesticate supply chains across a myriad of sectors and provide jobs and economic stability and security? Or are we just going to go for low cost and offshore everything. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see where people's priorities lies. They're not going to like what things are going to cost when they're made in the US, at least for some components. So to that point, and maybe I'll stick with you, Greg, the timing, and I don't think when this was discussed a couple of years ago in the lead up to the IIJA, I mean, we've been talking Infrastructure Week for the better part of 4 or 5 years. We finally have IIJA, and now we've got the BABA, Build America, Buy American Act, and things seem to be a little expensive these days. So is the timing just bad luck? What's that mean?
Right. So, I mean, I think even under ideal conditions, you'll find people who sort of differ on the overall wisdom of, protectionist policies. I mean, you could make cases either way. Certainly, it's kind of unfortunate in terms of the sort of inflationary period that we're in right now in terms of, trying to enact this type of policy that fits into one of the broad three waiver categories around costs. And I mean, I think there's a reason why the waiver conditions are kept pretty broad. It's so that they can, you know, have a pretty easy out in some of these conditions. So yeah, I think it's going to be definitely a tougher road going forward to really try to do this, based on costs alone, not to mention other sort of factors. So it's not great timing. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Eric, what about you? You feel the same way?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the timing is really, that's really the key question here. And I mean, you know, back to this conversation about the waivers, what is interesting. So I've been looking through myself and a couple other Bluefield colleagues have been taking a look at how some of the major federal agencies that do fund water infrastructure, namely FEMA and EPA, what are they trying to do? What are their kind of first steps in this process? How are they applying for waivers? What are the arguments that they're making? Because these are typically like, 6 to 10 to 12 page documents they're putting out saying, these are the reasons this is the waiver that we're requesting. This is why, these are the reasons we think that this is appropriate. And so it's interesting that none of them are actually mentioning inflation at all, right? They're not talking about the supply chain concerns really, or the kind of issues with domestic supply of certain goods. A lot of it is more, we don't really know, we just don't know how to administer these provisions because we don't know the state of the domestic supply chain for many of these manufactured goods, these construction materials that we've not had to think about before. So that's part of it. I mean, I think basically, and it's worth digging into for a second, because I think this is really the crux of how this is going to play out and how it's going to affect, Bluefield clients, water industry stakeholders. FEMA is taking a very kind of a forward-looking approach in the sense that what they're saying is, we want a 6-month waiver. The wording in their request is basically, FEMA has determined that it would be contrary to the public's interest to apply these provisions at all for at least 6 months, because we need to figure out, what is this going to mean for our stakeholders? What is this going to mean for the municipalities that are requesting FEMA money in the aftermath of major disasters? What is it going to mean for industry stakeholders, for manufacturers? So they're saying, we don't want to be subject to this at all for 6 months until we can kind of do some research and figure out what's going on here. EPA is taking a really different approach, which is interesting. They're basically arguing against that, as I mentioned, that kind of retroactive application of the BABA provisions. There's not a grandfather clause as written into the BABA, right? Even if you're a utility and you applied for funding for a project that you were working on, and you've already completed a lot of the engineering and design for this project, and you've kind of gone out and applied for SRF funding or for WIFIA funding, in theory, by the way that the law is written, BABA now applies to you, even though you didn't have it in mind prior to May 14th when you were preparing this project. And that's basically the argument the EPA is making. They're saying that, at the point at which municipalities or utilities apply for SRF funding or WIFIA funding, they've already done a lot of work. They've spent a lot of time. They've spent a lot of money on kind of the engineering, the design, the project specifications for the infrastructure projects that they're, investments that they're trying to make, to then have to go back retroactively at, the tail end of that process that may have taken a couple of years. It may have taken, $1 million contracts with engineering firms to go back and say, okay, well, now you actually need to change all of the components you're going to use because you have to use domestically sourced components. It's just, it's contrary to, they don't use that. They're not as aggressive in saying it's contrary to the public interest, but they're basically saying it's antithetical to the IIJA. It will cause issues with complying with, you know, Clean Water Act or Safe Drinking Water Act. Because again, if utilities are trying to make these investments to, you know, improve their compliance, to improve their treatment or to reduce sewer overflows or things like that, all of a sudden this project is going to be delayed by another year or two. It's going to cost another couple million dollars. So they're making this really strong argument that it's going to kind of derail infrastructure investment. And it may, and I think this is the part that's really interesting, that it could actually cause utilities and municipalities to go look for funding elsewhere, right? If they're, you know, having to all of a sudden at the end of the process meet these really stringent requirements, they may just say, to hell with it. We're not going to apply for SRF funding. We're not going to apply for WIFIA. We're not going to use IIJA funding. We're going to find something else where we're not even going to need any domestic sourcing requirements, not even the American iron and steel provision that they're all used to meeting. We're not going to have to deal with any of that. Plus, you know, there's all kinds of, there's labor requirements for projects with federal funding. There's a lot of requirements they could get out of if they go elsewhere for funding. And so that's kind of the argument that the EPA is making. Basically, any project for which engineering plans had already been submitted prior to the effective date of BABA, May 14th, should be waived. Anything going forward is going to have to apply. But if the engineering design is already kind of underway and has been submitted, then those projects should get waived. And that's the argument they're making. It's going to be interesting to see. I believe the WIFIA waiver should be approved. It's kind of already gone through the public comment period. It should be out pretty soon. The SRF one just opened up for public comment now. So I think that's going to be, you know, taking effect in a couple of weeks. But that's kind of the argument the EPA is making.
Yeah, I mean, I think you may have almost told me. I mean, there are just so many questions about this, about the timing. And I would say, and I think at least in the office, Greg and I have talked definitely over the past 6 months a lot about this. Like, what a terrible time to be dry. It could potentially drive up prices. Now, I would say this is a conversation I've had within the office the past couple of days, and that really is a lot of the drivers for inflation are ephemeral, potentially, we hope. And that would be like Russia-Ukraine crisis, energy prices and markets hopefully will settle down at some point. China's coming out of lockdown. So if the, you know, and plus additional interest rate hikes will temper things a bit. But there are a lot of open-ended questions that are way above my pay grade. But the bottom line is, you know, there's that aspect. And like you said, are these agencies, they're already overwhelmed, right? I mean, I think over time, agencies like the EPA, partly because of COVID, but even beyond that, even before COVID, they've been gutted, right? You know, whether it be enforcement, who's driving this, there's just a lot on their shoulders at this point. And so then to have to enforce or keep track of this is a whole nother issue that is probably seemingly unnecessary. That being said, nothing's going to happen if they're not told to do it, right? I mean, that's just kind of, and, you know, it's the sad part about SRF, the one part is states themselves, and it does depend state by state. Some of them are, I don't know, inept at taking full advantage of it. I don't know if that's is fair, might be a little harsh, but it's the numbers show that out, where others are far more aggressive and proactive of taking advantage of SRF funding. Nonetheless, all in all, every year we look at it, the numbers, the requests are, it's well oversubscribed, right? I think the last year we looked at it was $94 billion of funding was requested, of which all in, it was, you know, 15 to 20 billion was awarded through the SRF program. So I'm of mixed emotions on it, I think, you know, but tone wise, you know, I look at, you know, forcing companies and or utilities to source domestically. And all I see are higher dollar signs at that point. So I don't know, Greg, it looks like in true podcast fashion for the day, you got cut off for a second, but you're back with us. So I don't know if you have anything to add to the state of the world.
Well, I just to, you know, the beginning and end of Eric's commentary around EPA and their sort of issues with retroactivity seem to be kind of a fall well within the public interest sort of waiver. I mean, I think generally retroactivity is usually not a great idea in legislation to be in general. And with something like this, I mean, you can see how quickly it causes huge problems with projects that have already broken ground and, you know, been put on certain timelines and have certain budgets and so forth and contracts that have already set up. So, I mean, I would expect that that's only going to get worse. So it'd be interesting to see how many other sort of agencies and so forth, you know, have similar reasoning and are facing similar challenges in the projects that they're heading up.
Yeah. And Eric, I mean, you had mentioned, you were talking about the Black and Beach strategic direction survey results. I mean, it kind of validates some of these points that you've raised, right?
Yeah, I think that it was pretty timely that just came out, I think, in the last week or two. You know, Black and Beach, major engineering firm, they do this survey every year of the water industry. I think they do it for a couple of different industries, but the water one, they talk to like 300, you know, utilities and other stakeholders in the U.S., specifically U.S. water, wastewater, stormwater industry. And some of the, you know, they asked some questions this time around about federal funding, what utilities are doing about it, you know, which programs they're pursuing, which ones they're not. And some of the numbers were kind of staggering, right? So, you know, nearly 50% of the utilities they surveyed said that they weren't looking into the SRF program, which is kind of like a tried and true. I mean, that's been around for, you know, for a couple of decades, right? ARPA, the first kind of Biden administration COVID recovery stimulus funding that's been a big source of water infrastructure, nearly 60% not looking into that, 75% not interested in IIJA funding. So that in and of itself kind of gives you pause, right? Like if you know we're talking about this windfall in the industry, this unprecedented, you know, historic amount of funding going into water infrastructure, but nearly 70% of utilities aren't interested in, or 75% of utilities aren't interested in even trying to apply for it. That's troubling. And then, you know, getting back to this point about BABA, when the utilities were asked why they were not pursuing these funding programs, it's all, you know, it's the administratively too burdensome, it's too restrictive, it's too complicated. It was much more that it was, you know, like 70% or so said something like that, versus, you know, the remainder said they just didn't really know about it or they didn't think they needed it, right? So it's not that the need isn't there, it's that the programs are too complicated for them. And there's a stat that I think it actually was published in a previous report, but I hadn't seen it before, that was mentioned in this Black and Beach survey. You know, more than half of all US water and wastewater utilities have only one or two employees. 85% have three or fewer employees working at the utility as a whole. So Reese, you mentioned the kind of administrative pressure on the EPA, on FEMA, like, you know, that's a totally different level of administrative burden when you're asking, you know, one or two people running a utility to go out and navigate these really complex, well, you know, maybe well-intentioned, but really complex requirements to get money they need to improve their infrastructure.
Well, particularly when they have to, during the summer, when they have to go out and cut the lawn at the same time.
Exactly.
Of the facility. So, but yeah, I mean, it raises a really good point and something we've talked about over and over about these smaller systems and what is ultimately going to happen. I mean, step one, there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? So no one's just going to walk around, you know, we're not, you know, it's not post-war in Iraq where we fly over and dump dollar bills out of the plane. So I think the other thing is that, you know, they need guidance. And maybe this is another catalyst for consolidation, right? I mean, that's a big, there are a lot of water systems. I mean, consolidation, you know, either central, whether it be through investor-owned utilities, whether it be through co-ops, it can come in different forms. And I know different organizations are trying different models to roll things up, but it's not getting any easier, right? I think, you know, like we've talked ad nauseum, assets are getting older by the day. That seems to be pretty obvious. The regulatory environment's getting tougher. And this is just another level of regulatory stress on these small systems. But 85% is what you said, less than three people. That is insane.
Yeah, three or fewer, 85%. Yeah.
that's definitely a reality check, you know? And so to that point, I mean, we've talked about, you know, how do you even, we've talked to a number of vendors and it, whether it be through insight services or through consulting to say, you know, one approach is if you're going door to door is to help these smaller organizations with the SRF process or with the grant process. If you can do that and hold their hand through it, then you're more likely to sell your product. Quite honestly, it's a really good strategy and approach to, you know, for these smaller systems. I mean, everybody's fighting over the LADWPs and the DC waters because they're huge dollars, but there's a definite market strategy that we've seen where you go to the tier 2, 3, and 4 systems that are much smaller, have less dollars, less resources, but need more help, quite honestly. So, well, I don't know if you guys have anything else to add to this conversation. I mean, I guess my one last question would be, is there anything over the next couple of weeks or months that we should be looking out for with regards to BABA as far as like announcements or anything? Do you guys see anything on the horizon to look for?
I think this was the one I was waiting for, honestly, this SRF. It just opened up for public comment, I think, this week. So you know, I had been poking around earlier in the week and there was some stuff on there about, you know, their EV school bus program. And that was interesting too. But this was the one that I was really waiting for to see what types of waivers they apply for, how they make the case. And, you know, again, they're not really touching on the inflation aspect of it. They're not talking about specific types of products. It's more just the timing thing, which is interesting. And I don't know if, you know, I guess we'll have to keep an eye on that website just to see if they do put in, you know, project specific waivers, like if, you know, for metering projects where you're having issues with semiconductors or, you know, or SCADA projects, treatment technologies, it'll be interesting to see just what other types of waivers come in. But I think this was kind of it was a really interesting and informative opening statement from the EPA in terms of how they're viewing these new requirements and how they think they're going to be able to, you know, kind of apply them in the spirit of the law moving forward.
No, I agree with Eric. I mean, I think we were kind of all waiting in the office and across the organization to kind of see what the initial sort of response was going to be on the part of sort of the agencies that need to put this into play. And, you know, we've gotten our first look, major look from EPA on how they're approaching this internally. You know, and I think those discussions and sort of statements around what's feasible, you know, what's in the public interest, how they're viewing, you know, the provisions in the law are going to develop with time. And we'll see how, you know, the two branches of government kind of deal with each other in terms of how this gets shaked out and what is eventually required. So definitely an interesting space to kind of monitor over the summer, basically, to see what happens.
Yeah. And I'll throw one last one in there. And that is, I'm scared to ask this. It's election season. So if Congress changes hands and Senate, both one or the other, I mean, does that have any implications on this at this point? Or could it? Obviously, you talked about an act of Congress about ramping things up towards 75% over the next, you know, 5-10 years. Is there anything else that could change? Could they repeal it potentially?
IIJA in general, or?
Well, not IIJA. I don't know if that would probably cause riots. But the BABA, is there any implications for what's post-election that could change?
Well, the Republicans are all supposedly populists now and all about sort of the working man, as they claim. So I've just, not to get too far down that rabbit hole, but I mean, this is one of the few sort of things that you really do seem to be able to kind of get the parties to come together on around hard infrastructure. So I would expect if there's anything that to be any kind of common ground, this would be one of the larger things that would be it. So I wouldn't see that as being likely, but, you know, I'm not a DC insider or anything. So I'll leave it there in terms of the commentary. I don't know if Eric has anything to add.
I also dropped out for a second there, so I only heard the end of what you said, Greg. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of the spirit of what I was thinking as well, right? It is the bipartisan infrastructure law, right? Like that's very much touted as something that was hashed out between the parties And I don't see a lot of, you know, appetite specifically coming from one side of the aisle versus the other in terms of, you know, dealing with or doing something different with Build America, Buy America. There are certainly pieces of, you know, there, I'm seeing politics come up more in terms of, for example, how the EPA is approaching the SRF program in general. A lot of, you know, and we did a podcast on that a couple months ago, right? Some of the priorities around, you know, climate and environmental justice and affordability and, you know, labor unions and things like that. That's coming to the fore. And I think we're going to see some interesting battles between basically the Biden EPA and red states in terms of how that all plays out. But I'm not seeing necessarily, you know, particular partisan pushback one way or the other on BABA.
Yeah. Everybody who voted against this went out and took credit for it afterwards. So, I mean, I guess that sort of says something.
All right. We'll leave it at that. We'll leave it on a good laugh, sadly, and not get down into the weeds of politics in Washington. So we'll try to stay out of that. But look, guys, really appreciate it. Eric, you've just finished forecast. What are you working on now?
Catching up on my sleep. No, just trying to get some other stuff out the door. We've got some research notes coming, some stuff on utility innovation. We've got, we're going to be updating our report from 2020 on just the digital water strategies of major engineering firms. That's been a popular one. We're going to put out an update to that. So lots coming out the door.
Nice. And Greg, to the extent you can talk about what you're up to, what are you up to?
So a couple different projects in the consulting pipe around, well, some of them that touch upon this around sort of utility drivers for different types of projects and, you know, how they look at them, whether they're public, private, whether they look to outsource, whether they look to sell off completely, just some of those drivers. So there's definitely some relevance to IIJA and BABA in there. And yeah, it's interesting stuff. And looking at the Vegas odds for the US Open, of course.
Oh, yes, that's right. You're out of the office tomorrow. You'll be stuck in traffic out to Brookline for hopefully you're taking the T and then a shuttle bus over from there.
Yeah, there's going to be no vehicles that I'm driving. So
yeah, just keep in mind that the Boston Globe this morning said that the federal government has come down on the MBTA, which is the Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority, came down on them like a ton of bricks about all their safety failings and safety, et cetera, et cetera. So good luck with that. And we'll keep our fingers crossed for you. So, all right, guys, thanks. Thanks a million. This is great. Hopefully useful to all those in the water sector curious about buying American products. So thanks again. And let's talk soon. Take care.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Reese.
All right. That was fantastic. Thanks to Eric and Greg for explaining some things and talking shop. So before we sign off, please subscribe and give the Future of Water podcast a review. It's really helpful to us. If you subscribe, we see the downloads. We don't see how much you're listening to, but at least gives us some idea of whether this is worth it to you and us. Secondly, send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. This topic, Build America, Buy American, came out of actually our webcast. There were a number of questions related to that, as I mentioned in the discussion. So if there is anything else out there you'd like us to dig into, let us know. Lastly, tell a friend about it. It's always a good idea to reach out and say hello. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. So until we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.